Good morning. This is Political Perspectives. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. My guest is Portland attorney Stephen Goldberg. We're going to be talking about Tunisia and the Tunisian Revolution, which began late last year and led to the ousting of longtime President Ben Ali in January of 2011. Steve Goldberg recently returned from Tunisia. He went there with an international delegation of lawyers and academics to support the revolution and to investigate U.S. and European complicity in human rights abuses committed by the Ben Ali regime. Steve, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So much has happened in North Africa and the Middle East, and sometimes I think maybe a country like Tunisia has now fallen out of the press. Talk about what happened and what is still happening in Tunisia this year.
Well, Tunisia is a small country. Most Americans probably haven't heard of Tunisia at all. I think its prominence in the U.S. is that it was the location for filming of the first Star Wars movie. But other than that, I don't think people understood really what was going on in Tunisia. Nonetheless, there had been, since Ben Ali was in power, which was in 1987, there had been an incredibly corrupt and repressive regime. Tunisia originally had been a French colony. It had been declared its independence in 1956. The first regime, which was also a one-party state, was certainly less repressive, although became more and more repressive over the years. Despite this repression and corruption, there were, of course, political movements going on in Tunisia. Among political parties, it's a majority Muslim country. So the largest party was a party called Ennahda, which is a nationalist Muslim party. But it was particularly the focus of Ben Ali's repression, and particularly after September 11th, when Ben Ali saw an opportunity of getting even more military aid from the United States by focusing on the issue of terrorism. And terrorism, as he defined it, was repressing any young Muslim who went to the mosque on a regular basis. Those were the people who were really targeted and arrested and tortured and kept in prison for all of those years. Nonetheless, there was a political movement among various NGOs, various nonprofits, groups that were trying to strive for democracy. There was a strong labor movement in Tunisia, and a labor federation called the UGTT. Although it was very strong on economic issues, it nonetheless had learned to accommodate itself to the Ben Ali regime and to the political reality in Tunisia. So that was a situation at least before January of 2011, December 2010.
Mm-hmm. And so what happened? Describe a little bit about what happened at that time.
Well, the way this, I think, really began was back in 2008, a couple of years before, there was a major mining strike in the southern part of Tunisia. And the government used a significant amount of repression to strike down the workers who were striking at that time. That strike became significant in part because a lot of the local labor unions were pushing the National Labor Federation to take a stronger position against the state government, which the National Federation was somewhat reluctant to do. But the other significant thing that happened was that the word of that strike began to spread out through the country. And you have to understand, this was a one-country regime, or one-party regime, and the one party controlled all of the media. So if something happened like a big miners' strike, particularly outside of the major capital, Tunis, it was very difficult for word of that to spread. So what was different in 2008? And the difference was cell phones. All of a sudden, people were able to start texting and blogging. Facebook began to be used to talk about this incident. And that led to a meeting of various political parties in October of 2008 to try to get together. The Ennahda Party, the Muslim Party, met with the Communist Party and other political parties and worked out a common platform to how to focus on getting rid of Ben Ali. Nonetheless, the political repression continued until December 2010. And the specific incident which sparked this revolution was, again, in the central part of Tunisia. A fruit peddler, was having trouble selling his product without having to deal with the corruption, paying bribes. And in a particular incident happened where all of his fruit was confiscated, is my understanding. And he reached the point of totally being fed up with dealing with all of this, not being able to support his family, and engaged in the act of burning himself, of self-immolation. And again, that sacrifice, the word of that would never have gotten out through the country had it not been for the fact that people were able to start talking about that through social media, through the use of text messaging, whatever. And that word of that very quickly spread to the major cities. And at that point, particularly the young people began to organize demonstrations. So the first text message comes out saying we need to demonstrate against that. Let's meet in a certain square at a certain time. And that began to spread and build. And the political movements, for example, the labor federations, even the lawyers and other groups, followed the students in terms of taking to the streets. And that movement literally grew and grew until, with the demands being that Ben Ali dégage, leave the country, get away. And ultimately, the government did fall on January 14th. So in less than a month, the self-immolation happened on December 17th. In less than a month, the government fell.
So this is what you mean by the political movement following from the social movement of cell phones, internet, et cetera.
Right. A lot of the political leaders that we spoke to felt that, look, we believe we ultimately would have been able to get rid of Ben Ali. But there was no question in their minds that the social movement, that is the young people and the use of social media, is what really spurred them to act more quickly than they otherwise would have acted. For example, the Labor Federation, the UGTT, even when these demonstrations began, they did not immediately join in the demand that Ben Ali step down. They were simply pushing for more democracy, more transparency, less repression. But as the students kept pushing, and as the young people kept pushing, the Labor Federation and others realized that they needed to join in this movement immediately. And their position then began to change, and the Labor Federation took a much more active role and probably a decisive role in terms of these demonstrations.
Let's talk for a minute about the United States and, I guess, other Western countries' role in the support of the regime, of the Ben Ali regime. Can you describe that?
We had, when we were in Tunisia, our delegation, which included lawyers from the United States, from England, from Tunisia, and also from Turkey, met with a wide range of people. We met with government officials from the prime minister and justice minister to the labor leaders, to a lot of the NGOs that were working on this issue over the years, to many, many political prisoners, including the Tunisian who had been detained in Guantanamo for over 5.5 years and was then released from Guantanamo to the U.S., I'm sorry, to Tunisia, where he was immediately rearrested and spent another year and a half in prison until the revolution when there was a general amnesty. We also met with the political and economic counselor for the U.S. Embassy. So this was one of the higher people in the U.S. Embassy. And when we had been in Tunisia meeting with all of these people, and the other remarkable thing was that there were demonstrations going on, and we were there in March. Literally every day, there would be two or three demonstrations. We were there the week that Hillary Clinton visited Tunisia, and there were particularly a lot of anti-American demonstrations going on. And when we would talk to the people, why are you demonstrating? Look at the signs, try to find out what was going on. There was a real sense that the U.S. had been complicit in propping up the Ben Ali regime. That was also apparent when the WikiLeaks documents were released, which included a series of cables from the embassy in Tunisia, the U.S. embassy, to the State Department, in which the ambassador clearly spoke about the fact that this was a repressive regime, that this was a completely corrupt regime, but that nonetheless, we should be criticizing this regime, but somewhat quietly, and of course, we should continue giving military aid, because they were such a good partner in terms of supposedly fighting terrorism. The attitude, again, of people we spoke to was that, therefore, based on the WikiLeaks document, based on what they knew, that the U.S. had really been involved in propping up Ben Ali. The embassy was almost incredulous that people could feel that way about the United States. They would point to the fact that we issue, the State Department issues, annual country reports in every country where the State Department has an embassy, where they criticized the Ben Ali regime and said it was a corrupt regime. But of course, that would be followed by, but nonetheless, they are a necessary partner in fighting terrorism. Nonetheless, the embassy people had trouble understanding why it is that the people in Tunisia had this anti-American feeling. But the reality is that over the years, we gave millions and millions of dollars of military aid to the Ben Ali regime. After September 11th, we also additionally gave what is called Section 1206 aid, which is aid specifically focused on fighting terrorism. And that aid went on and on to the Ben Ali regime, and never did the United States embassy people or State Department people ever think to say, well, maybe we should threaten to cut off that aid unless Ben Ali ends the repressive and torture and other conduct that he was engaged in. In any case, that was not a consideration. But that's what the Tunisian people saw. That by the continually giving the money, by not being willing to openly criticize Ben Ali strongly in terms of his corruption and practices, that our government was in fact implicitly supporting the Ben Ali regime. That, combined with the other factors that people always talked about, was our involvement in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and our unconditional support of Israel, were all of the reasons, those combination of reasons, were why the basis of the criticisms we heard against the U.S. government.
I'm speaking with Portland attorney Steve Goldberg. He's talking about Tunisia, his recent being part of an international delegation there, and the revolution. So what is the attitude or the relationship now between the U.S. and Tunisia?
Well, what's happening in Tunisia right now is that there's a transition, basically, that's happening to truly democratic rule. And that's being done in as transparent and open a way as Tunisians can do, although it's not been completely transparent and open. So, for example, a constitutional commission has been appointed to set up elections, which are supposed to happen in July. And there's already been criticism that this commission, which is kind of organizing the elections, has and the commission includes certain political parties and certain individuals, but did not include everyone. And people are already somewhat skeptical about what's going on. We met with the head of this commission the day after they had had their first meeting, and he's a Tunisian, and he was surprised that at that first meeting there had been a tremendous amount of criticism. People came to the meeting, mostly young people, students, saying, what's going on here? Why aren't we involved? So I think there's this very fragile process of transitioning to democracy and elections that's going on in Tunisia. The United States, when Secretary Clinton was there the week that we were there, she announced that the U.S. would be giving $20 million specifically to Tunisia to help with the, quote, transition to democracy. And the people that we spoke to were immediately, I don't think the word is skeptical, but were at least somewhat suspicious about who this aid would be given to, what organizations, would it be given to political parties, what kind of agenda would the U.S. be pushing by giving this aid. And when we spoke to, we've tried to follow up on that. I think that's been one of the most important follow-up tasks of our delegation, is to try to understand how governments such as the U.S. will be supporting this revolution or undermining this revolution and trying to figure out what's going on. So we've done that by the agency that's actually in the State Department that will be distributing this funds. It's called the Middle East Partnership Initiative. And I actually spoke this morning to the person who is in charge of these funds, who talked about the various priorities they have and that they are now convening in terms of particularly the funds that will be used to support the political transition, that they are convening a group of experts, which supposedly includes some Tunisians, but also people from the U.S., to decide how these funds should be given, and an application process has been opened up. But our concern, again, is what's really going to happen here. And supposedly, that's the process and how the funds are given should be on the State Department's website, according to the individual I spoke with this morning. So we will continue to follow up on that and make sure how the follow up and monitor how those funds are spent. What the Tunisians told us, the basic word we heard was hands off our revolution. Of course, we appreciate support. Their economy is terrible right now. They need funds. But we want to be able to decide how those funds should be used. We would like those funds to be given to our government and let our government decide how the funds should be distributed. You know, it's very important in a new election where political parties are emerging from every corner of Tunisia that they all be allowed to actively and meaningfully participate in the election. That's not going to happen if funds are only funneled towards certain parties or the established parties or certain established individuals, which has, of course, been the history of U.S. involvement in developing or in other countries. Mm-hmm. So I think the real concern of the Tunisians is hands off our revolution, give us the funds, support our revolution, but let us decide how we're going to make this transition to democracy.
Steve, another area that we wanted to talk about was just how what's happened in Tunisia relates to political movements in the United States. Can you talk about that for a
minute? Sure. You know, what was the hallmark, I think, of this revolution, if you were looking at pictures of all of the demonstrations that were happening in December, there was a sign that was really important. It was called Ben Ali, I mentioned before, Degage, which is Ben Ali leaves. When I was looking at some of the video from the Wisconsin demonstrations, there were a couple of signs which actually said Governor Walker, dégagé. So I think people in Wisconsin, and I think the labor movement generally, have learned from and to some extent been inspired by what happened in Tunisia, what happened in Egypt, with the idea that if change is really going to happen in a country, in a society, that it doesn't just involve elections. It doesn't just involve sometimes talking. It involves taking to the streets. And I think that's a lesson that perhaps American labor and those of us, I think, on the left in generally have failed to learn over the years. I think we've always understood it, but maybe failed to act on over the years. And I think what was most exciting about the demonstrations that have been going on in Wisconsin and in other states now is that labor people have been willing to take to the streets.
Steve, it looks like we might have a quick call. George, if you have a very quick question, because we don't have much time in this interview, would you go ahead with your question or comment, please?
Yeah, I heard something I thought was rather strange. They're asking for funding, but they want to do their own thing. That is totally unrealistic.
Okay. Do you want to respond to that, Steve, real quick?
Well, unrealistic in the sense that would the United States ever, has the United States ever given money to anyone which where the United States interests haven't been furthered? Yeah, maybe it is unrealistic. But I think Tunisia presents a hallmark, a moment, I think, in the United States where we need to learn from what's been going on, certainly in our history generally, but particularly over the last decade or so, where involvement in Iraq, involvement in Afghanistan has not created any change in our interest at all. And I think there's a moment what we have to learn from these revolutions is when people are telling us, support us, but support us in a way that respects us, that we need to learn from that. Is that being unrealistic that the U.S. would do it? Perhaps, George, you're right. But I think we can hope and learn from these changes, which have been so dramatic, and maybe it will be an opportunity for the U.S. to change the way it does things. But I may be a little bit naive.
In the last few minutes that we have here, Steve Goldberg, can you talk about the future of Tunisia, what their hopes are and what the possibilities are?
I think that I briefly described the process that they're going to go through. The focus right now is to have these elections. They're hoping to do them in July. And the elections will be creating a constitutional committee. That committee, in turn, will appoint a government. Right now, there's an interim government. It will appoint the next interim government. And then immediately after that, or soon after that, elections will happen in terms of a parliament. So that seems to be the process that they're going under, although, again, it's changing back and forth. The concern, the focus right now is, I think, on creating democracy and democratic institutions. When we were there, though, we talked about the economic issues. Tunisia right now has huge unemployment, 15% unemployment in the cities, and probably closer to 30% or more in the regions outside of the cities. And the real concern is, how do you deal with getting economic aid other than by letting multinationals in? If multinationals come in, how are you going to be able to keep your independence in that respect? What about the IMF? What about the World Bank? How are you going to avoid all of those conditions which have been so repressive and have undermined democracy in so many countries from undermining the Tunisian revolution? And when we spoke to people, I don't think that there is a clear program among people of how to move forward, at least on the economic front at this point. I think the focus right now, and I guess you have to put yourself in their feet, for the last 20 years, they've been in a situation where whenever any opinion was expressed, they could anticipate being arrested and tortured and imprisoned for expressing those opinions. So I think their focus right now is to stay one step at a time. Our first step is to create the democratic institutions to restore our dignity, to create transparency in our country, and then move on to the economic issues. Whether that's also somewhat naive, is a concern I think that we had when we were there, but that certainly does seem to be the focus. Nonetheless, these people are, the Tunisians are a strong, vibrant, at this point, very excited population. And I think to some extent we have to trust that they know what they're doing in terms of their revolution and figure out ways of learning from it and supporting it.
Okay. We only have maybe a minute or so left, Steve Goldberg. So in that minute, what would you say to U.S. activists, progressives, what role they could possibly have or what they should do in relationship to their own government around this issue?
Well, as I said, I think it's important to monitor how we're responding to all of the revolutions and change that's going on in the Middle East. And that involves, in terms of Tunisia, it involves funding. In terms of Egypt, it will also, to some extent, involve funding. In terms of countries like Bahrain and Yemen and certainly Libya, we have to be asking ourselves, is the way that we responded to Libya the way that we can further revolutions here? I think Libya is a complicated question. I know many of my friends on the left in the group that I work with, the National Lawyers Guild, have taken the position against the intervention in Libya. But there are complicated questions about this whole issue of what the UN calls right to protect and how we do intervene in countries where there are terrible abuses going on in terms of war crimes or crimes against humanity, against their population. So I think we need to be very alert to what's going on in that part of the world and to really monitor the use of U.S. involvement in that situation and bring the lessons to the streets of the United States.
Okay, Steve Goldberg, I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking about this and let people know that if they want more information, they could probably contact you through the National Lawyers Guild.
Right, or they can just contact me through my office and then we'd be glad to forward out any other information.
Okay.
If they Google my name, my website should come up.
Okay. Okay, thanks again. I've been speaking with Steve Goldberg. He's recently part of an international delegation to Tunisia. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. Stay tuned for the second part with Carlos Chavez.